Hello, everyone. Welcome to the happiest pod on earth. I'm Steph. I'm an educator who uses passions and fandoms to help my students grow and learn about themselves and the world around them.
And I'm Ariel, a licensed therapist who uses clients' passions and fandoms to help them grow and heal from trauma and mental unwellness.
Here at Happiest Pod, we dissect Disney mediums with a critical lens.
Why? Because we are more than just fans, and we expect more from the mediums we consume. So, Steph, what are we going to be discussing today?
Well, we are actually recording in a very special place. We are recording at Stack Up Studios here in Los Angeles.
And at their Phalanx house.
At their Phalanx house, right. But this place is very special because it is very video game centric. And that's what we are going to be talking about today. So Ariel, can you give us a little bit of background about what Stack Up does here?
Absolutely. So Stack Up is a military charity supporting active and veteran service members in the U.S. and abroad. They also support anybody who is connected, who has like government connections, would also be deployed to like DOD members. And they do things like air drops, where they drop gaming equipment and geek culture events at this spot specifically. They do peer-to-peer mental health support for veterans, and they do volunteer teams that engage with veteran outreach and community betterment. And here at the Phalanx House, they have a variety of different events, especially around the holidays for service members who may not have family in the area. They have like a D&D night. Mm-hmm. They have Year's Eve and Christmas parties or Thanksgiving. They'll be having a Super Bowl party here. And so it's a really wonderful nonprofit, and they embrace gaming and geek culture. So obviously a really good partner with Geek Therapy. And we are in their one of their podcasting rooms recording today.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could kind of take a snapshot of all of this stuff, because there is a lot of amazing things here that a gamer would only dream of having just accessible to them. I think that this is a great way for veterans to kind of connect with the things that they love, kind of like how what we talk about here at Happiest Pod on Earth. I think the things that make us happy and the things that make us whole and human and all those good things, you need to connect those to yourself every so often, depending on, you know, even if you're a veteran, even if you're an educator, even if, as a therapist, you got to connect to the things that you love. And I think getting back to those roots, especially for people who have been in very traumatic situations, such as veterans, it's really important to rehabilitate yourself, especially after your duty is done. Special thanks to Steven and his crew for letting us use this space and setting us up today, because this is amazing and we're very happy to be here.
And for those of you who might not be aware, oftentimes when Steph and I are recording the podcast, we are not in the same room. We are actually seeing each other through Zoom. Mm-hmm. And so this is the first time that we actually have gotten to record in person.
Yeah, like in face-to-face with each other, which is awesome, because we have very many, many conversations with each other in the car or when we're hanging out. But whenever we're recording, we actually are not in the same room together. So this is actually going to be very exciting, because we can actually have a real conversation.
Yes, yes. And so today, because we are here at Stack Up and we are part of Geek Therapy, there is a geeking genre that we have not stepped into or talked mm-hmm. about, and that is video games.
That's right. I would not claim myself as an avid gamer. However, I still play video games, mm-hmm. whether mm-hmm. it's on my phone, whether it's on my Switch that like I let die and then revive again every week. I still video game. And I know, Ariel, you game too, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that goes to there's actually no official definition of what a gamer is, except for it's a person who plays games, whether for fun or professionally. But in the, you know, in the media, socially, in our zeitgeist, we tend to think of gamers, really people who do first-person shooters, often male. Like, that's the image we have mm-hmm. in our mind. Mm-hmm. And video games, there are a variety of video games. There's cozy gaming, mm-hmm. there's sandbox play. There's a lot of ways to do video mm-hmm. games that isn't just first-person shooters. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the Disney genre, that does sort of help meet the middle for individuals who may not be excited to do first-person shooters, but they want to do maybe puzzles, they want more world building, they want expansion. Mm-hmm. Even with the, I would say, some of their older school games that were very difficult, mm-hmm. it really captivated like a specific audience of individuals who may not use the term gamer because it's been codified in a certain way.
Right. And when I think of gaming and of Disney, I feel like they've always been parallel worlds, but haven't necessarily connected in the way that most people would like them to. I think the closest we've gotten to that is Kingdom Hearts, because it was so widely appreciated. Mm-hmm. And it was at a time where people were kind of expanding what their knowledge of video games were. It wasn't just first-person shooter. It wasn't just, you know, Sonic or Mario, where, you know, it's like 2D like that. But I mean, the earliest video game I played was the Little Mermaid hand game. And that, I don't know if you all remember that. Maybe it's before your time for some of you who are listening. But it was a handheld game, and it only had a couple graphics on it. It never really moved. It wasn't like watching a video. I don't even know what it's called. It's like LCD. It's not even LCD. It's like some crystal. I don't know what it is. But basically, it was like the old Tetris that wasn't even on a screen. It was just these little images of Ariel swimming through in black and white. And she would keep going, and she would like gather things in the sea. And then at the end, she would battle Ursula with the ship. And the ship's tip.
Oh, okay. And then like in the
you
movie.
Would just basically jab Ursula until she died. It was very old. It had like three buttons.
You said it was a handheld game. What was it on?
It's a handheld game. Like, it was just handheld.
It was it. It wasn't like a cartridge.
No, not a cartridge at all. This is like probably early 90s. We'll put a picture of it in our Instagram just so you all know. But yeah, it was just a handheld game, something that you would just pick up and buy, and it was its own console. Wow. I know there's a name for it. I'm gonna look it up, but that's what my earliest game was, and it was Little Mermaid. And I remember you only had like three lives. Mm-hmm. So if you had three lives, you would have to start all over again and go through it. Like, you would not be able to respawn or revive, all that stuff.
No autosave.
You couldn't even save. There wasn't even an option for that. It taught me resilience because I died a lot. I was probably like 6 or 7, but I loved Ariel. I loved the Little Mermaid. And I think, you know, that and playing as her gave another dimension to something that I loved.
I don't think that was the only game that you played, though, back then. Was the other one the Aladdin game?
That was a different version of that same handheld game. Still a black and white screen. You would just kind of like, I think, so if Ariel was collecting things on the ocean floor, Aladdin was stealing like different breads.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what I remember.
Okay.
And then you would have to battle Jafar as like the genie, the bad genie. And I think that's what it was, because Ursula started off small and she kind of grew. And that was like the one graphic they had. And then so same thing with with Jafar. He would start off small and then he would become the big red genie. So they were all basically the same cut games, just packaged in different ways. I think it was made by Tiger handheld games. That's what it was called.
Oh wow. Yeah. Okay. For me, I did not play any Disney games growing up. I had Pokemon Red. I had the red cartridge on my Game Boy. But for the most part, all the video games were my brother's. He had the console. He had all the gaming devices. And it wasn't that I wasn't interested. It was just that was his thing. And so because it was his, it couldn't be mine. He liked burgers, so I had to like chicken nuggets. Like, sibling rivalry.
Couldn't be the same.
No. And now I eat burgers, so there you go.
Take that.
growing up, if I played video games, it was at other people's houses until I went to college. And when I went to college, you know, I had an Xbox and I got video games. I had Halo and I had Left 4 Dead. Like, those were the games that I had, but I never had a Disney game. So the first Disney game that I ever played was on my mobile device, and it was the Disney Emoji Blitz, and it's all the characters as little emojis. Yeah. And basically, if you played Candy Crush, it's one of those little puzzle games.
Love
where you're moving
games.
The different items and trying to like explode things or get a special power. And then after that, it was the Just Dance games. They have Disney songs. The newest Just Dance has the Moana song.
Oh,
yeah.
How far I'll go.
It's one of the dances.
It's interpretive dance because that's our contemporary because
it's
not very upbeat.
For Christmas, I bought my friend's kids the copy of the Just Dance, and they sent me a video of their son doing the Moana, How Far I'll Go. Lots of beautiful arm movements.
Yeah.
So for me, there's been a lot of catch up because I never got introduced to Kingdom of Hearts, but you've played it, yes?
I played it. I never finished it. I think Kingdom Hearts came around at the time where I didn't have like an up-to-date PlayStation or anything like that. my first console was a Genesis, a Sega Genesis, because I love Sonic. That's like my favorite game. I still play it to this day. I have it on my Switch, and I'm so glad that I don't have to just go through it. I could just cheat and go to the menu and use the code that I want to, so I could just jump to any level. But yeah, so because I had a Sega Genesis, I had that Sega Genesis for a long, long time, because I'm a girl. Nobody really wanted to be like, oh, she needs a PlayStation 1, 2, what have you. She's like, she doesn't need that stuff. Why would she need that? I used to live with my older cousins who were guys. They were sort of gamers, but not really. They were more into cars. So I never really got to play like in the 2000s, like console games, like on the PlayStation until I started dating my now husband. So he had like a modded PS1. I don't know if we still have it. It was like, it was like green, but it was like see-through green. Like, it was pretty cool. A lot of my gaming went through that experience and that outlet. So I didn't pick the games. It was the games that he had. So I did have like a little bit of a break, and then I played Kingdom Hearts. I don't even think I played it on his. I think I played it at like a friend's house. And it was really cool just to see somebody who looked like, you know, Link just going through, and then you see, oh my God, there's Goofy, there's Mickey. And I was like, it almost didn't make sense to me why this was happening. I'm like, who said that this was okay? Because if I'm going to play a first person, I want to be Mickey. I don't want to be somebody else. I want to be Mickey going through, you know, doing Mickey things. But it did make sense. And I think it, like, it just basically took all the anime fans, all the otaku out there, and it took all of the Disney fans and just mashed them together and said, let's see what happens. And it was wildly popular. I've always wanted to go back and play it again, just because visually it's stunning. I think they really took a lot of creative freedoms with what everything looked like, and because technology was advancing so much at that time, they were just like, let's just see what sticks. And then they really listened to Japanese developers, because prior to that, I remember seeing Dance Dance Revolution, but Disney. There's a Disney mix, and I remember seeing it a lot when I went to Japan too. They had your regular DDR machine with like those songs, and then they had a Disney one, and they had that for Disney fans, because Disney fandom in Japan is wild. That's like a whole nother thing, but they love Dance Dance Revolution, they love Disney, so they put those things together.
I would love to do that. That is awesome.
We will. When we go to Japan one day, we will. But yeah, like you were saying, I loved rhythm games, I love dance games, puzzle games, things that are not high stakes and high anxiety for me, I can do. Especially as I got older, and I feel like my anxiety just got larger and larger. I think just, you know, that fear of loss just wasn't there, because I'm like, oh, you know, it's not like I'm getting towards, or I don't have like a big goal. And I feel like that for a lot of kids that I work with, when they play video games, they're very selective in what they want to play, just because they don't want that fear of failure. They don't want that anxiety of, oh my God, what if I can't accomplish this? And like, I think having these different games, especially having Disney, having different sorts of games, like you said, cozy gaming and all that stuff, it's really good to have like a wide array.
Now there are more options in regards to gaming that it isn't seen as one genre, one type of experience. And when it comes to doing therapy, when it comes to teaching, having that variety and understanding, like for you, the way the student learns, or for me, the way the client is looking towards change, and how they're thinking about the thinking. Those experiences have highlighted the importance of having diversity in treatment. I think diversity in gaming is just creating more community, more connection. I know that Josue, our founder, still plays the Disney Blitz game and regularly attempts to try and beat dad now and sister, and that they regularly use that as a means of checking in. It's like, oh, I saw you logged in and you played, so I know that you're doing well.
That's really awesome. I just re-downloaded Emoji Blitz. And I was like, you know what? I need another puzzle game, because RIP to my Sailor Moon game that died a long time ago. It was my favorite. Shout out to you guys who played Sailor Moon Drops. I love that game to death, but there'll be another one like it.
You played it the night before your wedding.
I did, because I was so nervous. And I just needed to take the edge off.
And gamings can allow us an avenue to be able to self-regulate, to be able to calm ourselves. It's a great stress reliever.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not really Disney related, but I played New Horizons while I was pregnant because it was during the pandemic. I had my baby at the height of the pandemic. I didn't know what was going to happen. There was a lot of what ifs and unknowns. And it was very scary for me as, you know, somebody who was about to bring another life into the world.
For the first time, too.
For the first time. And I had like nobody to turn to because there were all the structures that were there for women were gone because the world got flipped upside down. So New Horizons was definitely my comfort. And I played it and I played it and I played it. And because it's open world, there's no end to it. It just gave me a sense of, you know, I can get back to a little bit of normalcy through my little animal friends.
Well, and I think speaking of open world, you just mentioned that Disney dropped some news really recently about an open world.
Disney did a lot of announcements on February 7th, and one of the biggest things that they announced is that they are going to partner up with Epic, who makes Fortnite. They are investing $1.5 billion into basically a new universe that's going to resemble a metaverse. This is the first time that Disney is going to be investing this much into gaming. Wow. And like I said in the beginning, Disney and gaming has always been parallel for me. Mm-hmm. I feel like now they're going to merge in a really, really big way just because they want to tap into, you know, younger audiences who play things like Fortnite, Minecraft, things that are open world that just kind of have no end and kids can just tap in and play. They want to bring the Disney world into that. Obviously, it's a big money move. Yep. It's going to bring in a lot of revenue, hopefully. But I don't know. We'll see what happens because I feel like when Disney makes these big moves, sometimes it's a hit, sometimes it's a miss.
Well, and what we do know is Disney's a big conglomerate organization. We can admit that. And video games, I think the studies have shown, create more money than like film and books and music combined. That's how much revenue like the gaming industry itself makes. So it's a smart move to try and integrate better with gaming than be that parallel. But it's going to be really interesting to think of Disney in a metaverse. I think this like makes me think of Wreck-It Ralph when we saw the Disney princesses together for the first time. Mm-hmm. Because in general, the way that they market, you know, their different franchises, and even in the parks, they're their own sections, their own worlds. Mm-hmm. They don't intermingle.
No.
So the idea of an open world where they could intermingle, where, you know, these characters actually may know each other or experience each other, that's just going to be mind-blowing. and I think we'll usher in a new way of seeing Disney. Mm-hmm. And I think kind of connects to how they have made such like integration in the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
It only makes sense that they're going to try and think of how to integrate those things.
Yeah. I feel like now if they do a Christmas special, normally it's a Star Wars Christmas special, a Marvel one, and like a Disney one, they might all just be in the same Christmas special at this point. Mm-hmm. But I'm very curious to see, you know, of course there's going to be a lot of naysayers into this. Us being the age that we are, we know them as separate entities. Mm-hmm. Kids nowadays think of Disney, Marvel, Star Wars as one because that's how they were introduced. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there's going to be like, that's not canon. This is not part of the story. Why are they doing this?
The toxicity.
You know, I feel like there's just going to be a lot of toxicity because, yeah, people are going to want to protect what they know and how they know it and keep it and preserve it that way. But I think the interesting thing about Disney and being innovators is that they try to push that envelope and think forward. And I mean, when I think about kids now, if I ask them if Star Wars was Disney, they'd say yes. They wouldn't think of it any other way. So I think it's very interesting to see it from that perspective.
Yeah, I think watching things evolve and grow and knowing if you can evolve and grow with it is going to be a real like generational marker. Mm-hmm. One of their cozy games, it's called Dreamlight Valley. It came out in December of 2023. Mm-hmm. And it appears to be somewhat of like an open world game. And it does appear to be that you can interact with the different characters, but it doesn't look like those characters interact with each other. So there still seems to be some separation. Now, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I've watched, that seems to be how it looks like. There's still no pressure. It is cozy gaming, but it'll be interesting to see a huge metaverse where they could maybe connect and these different characters could interact. Or if it's still going to be what they've done like Dreamlight Valley and Kingdom Hearts where it's this one person that interacts. Or even like, what is it? Sophia the First?
Yeah, Sophia the First. Mm-hmm. Once Upon a Time is like that too.
Yes.
The drama series where one person interacts with everybody, but I don't remember them all being together.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's going to be very interesting the way that they're going to weave this web of a metaverse, because the point of the metaverse is to bring everyone together.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. I know that they're going to do mobile gaming. I know that they're going to be doing laptop gaming, and they're going to be doing console gaming. So they're going to really try to expand on all those things. One of the reasons why they did this is because they saw how well Marvel and Sony Spider-Man has been doing.
Mm.
Even with the different iterations of Spider-Man, whether it's the Sony universe or the Disney universe, this is its own thing, and it's made so much money just because the quality of the gaming is so good. And I think that's another question I have, is because this conglomerate is taking this over, I wonder what the quality is going to be like.
Because
the Sony Spider-Man games have largely been developed by themselves.
Yes.
And they have people who are, you know, solely dedicated to just that.
Mm-hmm.
There's always that saying, you know, like, sometimes a jack of all trades isn't going to do everything
mm-hmm.
as well as somebody who's just focused on one would do. So, I mean, that's another thing to consider.
Yeah, my roommate has played both of the Spider-Man games, and I've watched, I haven't played, but they do have the different Spider-Man outfits from the movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, that would be like, I guess, the Easter egg.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Parker and the Miles Morales there are not the ones mm-hmm. that we saw in our Marvel universe.
Yeah.
And really more connected towards Miles Morales mm-hmm. and Peter Parker of like the Sony universe.
Yeah.
And it is such a good game. The storytelling is mm-hmm. great. There's a lot of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
The second game, one of the characters I think that Miles Morales has a crush on is deaf and signs in ASL, and Miles Morales learns ASL. Oh. So trilingual.
Yeah. In the best way possible.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I've heard nothing but great things about that game. I haven't played it myself, but I mean, even the, like, all the way down to the graphics. I mean, I wonder, because, you know, Fortnite is, you know, it's a game that isn't very focused on very intricate graphics, because, again, it's made for younger audiences. So they, you know, like things that are a little bit more cartoony and animated. It's going to be very interesting to see what Disney does with this, because that's a lot of money to invest. Yes. Billions.
Yes. And so some of the things that we've already talked about is, gaming is a way to self-regulate. Gaming is a great way to de-stress.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you focus. You mentioned patience and distress tolerance with mm-hmm. the Little Mermaid game.
Mm-hmm.
I think even like patience from the Kingdom Hearts fandom, because the second game didn't come out to like, what, 8 years later or some nonsense?
Yeah, huge gaps. And I think even playing the earlier games taught you patience, because it was hard when I remember playing, I don't know if you play this, the Toy Story games.
Mm-mm.
So there was a Toy Story games that was on the PlayStation 1, I think. I think this was Toy Story 2, because I know at this point, Buzz and Woody were friends.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, you're basically going through the world as Buzz, and you had to do all of these acrobatics around Andy's room to get to different levels. And I remember being Buzz and trying to do like this front flip like gymnastics thing on a bar. So you had to jump on the bar, you had to like hold on to it, it would twirl, but you had to do it like 5 or 6 times around the room to get to the next level.
Wow.
If you fell, you technically died.
Oh no.
I got stuck on that part for so long. I remember spending days, maybe even weeks, trying to just get from one part of Andy's room to another.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this was meant for a 10, 11-year-old me,
yeah.
but here I was, super frustrated and trying and trying and trying again. Now, with games like Fortnite, you don't have to go through things like that in order to get to the next level.
Well, I think some people have done like a survival mode.
Right.
Yeah.
But you would have to pick that mode in order to be there. It's
not like people have designed them
yes.
as well.
Yeah. Right. That's a good point to make. It's great that it's not, you know, limiting, mm-hmm. but at the same time, the different skills you just never like that resilience and
yes.
just like enduring and like trying to get it done, that's not there too. So I mean, I'm glad that they're taking like equitable approach to it,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I'm wondering, you know, could they be challenging kids a little bit more in certain ways, you know?
Well, I think it's also interesting to see how people game now, even in the way with open world games,
mm-hmm.
how they challenge themselves. Because how many times have we seen like now mods in Fortnite?
Right.
Or like now the new thing is Pal World?
Pal World,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm already hearing about mods that are being put in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes coding.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of effort. So it's interesting the desire for customization
mm-hmm.
that we didn't have growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that level of customization, how it forces you to think of the game not in the mechanics the game was created.
Right.
We have TAGS coming up, the Therapeutic Applied Geek and Gaming Summit. And one of the things that has been talked about in some previous TAGS is that technically, when we are using games therapeutically, we're not using them how they were designed to be used. I find that interesting in the trajectory of the way the world is now, that we do use things off-brand, if that makes sense. That with the gaming, like, we are thinking about the mechanics differently now than we did before, because there's just more opportunity to be able to do that, more advancement.
And I think depending on what console you're using, you're experiencing things in different ways. If you're gaming on a laptop, that's different from gaming on a console. If you're gaming on a desktop, that's different than gaming on your phone. It's different ways to experience different things in different worlds. I think that's kind of like the crux of all of this, right? Is because you have so many options. You got to figure out which one works for you, and that takes time. It's kind of like giving kids just too many options. And if you don't have the capacity to show them different ways to do one thing, they're never going to know what's best for them, but also they're only going to know what you show them. So, yeah, there's that
So it's
caveat.
that fine balance of, like, as much open opportunity and limited choice, especially when you're thinking of, like, young minds. And when I think of the games that I was introduced to when I was younger, except for Pokemon, because I loved, like, Pokemon, I was introduced to those games because someone else introduced them to me, not because I was searching them out. I played, like, a lot of Rock Band because I had a boyfriend at the time who wanted to play the drums. And that was, like, that was accessible.
Yes, because it was right there.
And I fell in love with it. So I think the other thing that games do, besides challenge you within the game mechanics, as well as now this new opportunity to customize, I think they also introduce you to, like, new communities and friendships and opportunities when you are open to the idea of experiencing it with someone else.
Right. You were mentioning Rock Band, and I remember Guitar Hero being such a big thing, and I didn't play until my brother got one because he wanted to play guitar. I did too, but I didn't get that. Because he did, that's how I started playing Guitar Hero. But I remember my mom just being like, I'm not gonna buy you these other pieces. Like, when Rock Band came along, she's like, that's too many pieces, that's too expensive. I wish there was a way where you could just sample all of this stuff. I know it's so difficult to do that now because Best Buy used to do, and Best Buy and Toys R Us would do like a version of it back then, to where you would try these games out in a, in a safe setting. The first time I played Tekken was in a department store, and me and my best friend, every time we went to the department store, we would play Tekken. Because that's the only way we would play it. Our parents would never buy this for us, but here it was accessible for us. And that's the only reason why I knew about it and I was able to talk about it with friends later on in life, is because I played it in a department store. But kind of like how, and I'm going to show my age like a lot here, is when you used to go to Virgin Records and you would preview a CD before you bought it because it was there for you to listen to. I wish they would do that with more games, especially towards younger kids. Because how are you going to know, and how are you going to invest if you don't know if they like it or not?
You're really highlighting how, like, socioeconomic status in video games are, for our generation, that was a huge divide. I think this generation has so much access to a variety of video games. It's really, like, the top tier ones that get advertised the most that might be inaccessible. And now I do know, like, Xbox and PlayStation has, like, a Game Pass, and you can have a subscription there. But again,
You need the
you need the console and the subscription, right? And I know that there was this website, and it seems to still exist, called Gamefly, that you could rent the
You could
games.
get, yeah, and then it was like the old school Netflix where they would send it to you.
Now, however, and it still looks like it, you couldn't rent the actual, like,
Consoles?
pieces,
Oh,
right?
right. Yeah.
So, like, Rock Band, like, it's playing on a controller doesn't make sense.
No.
Like, Guitar Hero doesn't make sense.
I
However,
tried. It's horrible.
I'm also not seeing, with the exception of virtual reality, a lot of video games that require anything extra but the controller. Am I wrong about
I
that?
mean, as far as I know, I haven't seen one since that needed anything extra, because I think everybody's goal now is convenience and accessibility. Everyone has a phone. Most people have a laptop. I mean, maybe most households have one console or another, whether it's an Xbox or a PlayStation. So I don't know. as far as I know, no.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see the trajectory of gaming as well, because I remember having a special backpack that fit my Xbox 360 and all of its pieces so that I could take it somewhere with me, like take it to a friend's house. And now it's just so easy to, like with the Switch, just transport a game. And especially now that video games are mostly digital, you don't even have to buy a hard copy and you can just log in.
And like, download the software.
Download the software, yes.
Yeah. Arcades are not a big thing anymore. If you are going to an arcade such as Around One around here, which is like, you know, a big entertainment center, kind of like how All Amusement Fun Center used to be, you're playing those, I don't even want to call it carnival games, but they're almost carnival games. They're not exactly video games. Whereas when you go to Japan, which has a huge gaming culture, you can still go to an arcade and play something that is a video. You can sit down and play whatever iteration of Street Fighter or whatever. And they have levels. They have one level for fighting games. They have one level for racing games. They have one level for cute kawaii games. They have one level for like virtual horse racing. Like, I mean, the accessibility is so much more there just because it's integrated into their culture. I wish that they had something that here, just so that, you know, more, if they do want to invest all of this money, this is what I'm like at the point that I'm trying to make, is they if they want to invest all this money into gaming, I feel like they have to speak to everyone, no matter what their socioeconomic status is, no matter what their, you know, accessibility level is. It needs to be available for them to consume so that they have the opportunity to want to do it at home. I feel like America operates so much in silos instead of, you know, collective. That's my two cents.
Yes. And I think you're also highlighting not just the trajectory and evolution of games, but you're also highlighting the cultural component. Because in Japan, video games are the culture. When we saw the Tokyo Olympics, they played video game orchestral music. And it's interesting that you're talking about like arcades and spaces, because I remember going before Rock Band even existed. I lived in Korea, and I was like 13 at the time, and we would go to like gaming centers or like a PC Bong. And at the gaming center, there, this song always makes me think of like going to this gaming center with my dad. The song "Kiss Me" by Sixpence, it was a song that they had a drum that I could drum to, and it was like the only
taiko drum, because there's that game too, which I really really
I don't know what it was. It was just an arcade game, and there was a little drum, and they were like actual like the electric drums.
So there's that one. So there's, I've seen that one, I've seen the taiko drum, and then there's one where you could be a DJ too.
So I played that, and that was the song I picked because it's the only English song. And every time I was really good on the drums on this thing.
An interesting.
And then many years later, because I was 16 or 17 when the Rock Band came out. You saw this. So when my dad passed away, we went through his memorabilia. He had a lot of memorabilia, and I showed you that he kept a GameWorks card.
Yes, he did.
And so if you, some of you don't know, GameWorks was like a gaming entertainment center location.
It's like Round One that I mentioned earlier.
But this one, I guess, how would you describe it? Somewhat like Dave and Buster's, but like not.
But not. So the GameWorks that I went to, I remember GameWorks only existing in Las Vegas for a long time. I go to Vegas quite often, at least a couple times a year, because I feel like Vegas is LA East. As an Angelino, you just go to Vegas. It's just the thing you do.
It is.
GameWorks was right next to the M&M store. And as a kid, when you go to Vegas, there's literally nothing you could do but go to GameWorks and the M&M store. So GameWorks is basically a big arcade. There's a bowling alley there. You can do various games. It's not like, you know, Chuck E. Cheese or all that stuff where you had like a physical aspect to it. It's more of like tween gaming, I want to say, if I want to put kind of like a generation or like an age range on it. So you could play basically arcade games, skee ball, all that stuff. That was the epicenter. It was such a late 90s early 2000s thing.
And they built one in Guam, and it closed in 2006. So that was the GameWorks that I went to.
Oh my goodness.
And so was that huge. Was the card my dad had held on to.
Oh my goodness.
Was the we had already moved and he had held on to it. And the game that I remember was, and I see like now I think of like safety stuff because I'm old, but you strapped yourself in and it would go up and down. Like it actually went up like two or three floors. And what it was you were shooting down these virtual balloons, which were supposed to be other people that were strapped to this chair.
I feel like I saw that, but I was never allowed to go on it because it was so expensive. And
at some point, like you'd be shooting, and you'd feel your vehicle move up mm-hmm. and down like two or three floors, and then at the end you would see who was at the highest. Yeah. I was in the middle, so I felt really good about my shot, but I hadn't realized because I was playing the game how high up I was until it was time to reveal the score. Yeah. And like the screen like sort of went away and I freaked out. So I have a huge fear of heights.
Yeah.
And I was like proud of myself for like beating all of these like dudes, but I was also very scared and wanted off of that game ride. And I don't think anything like that exists anymore.
No, because GameWorks was always in a place where they had a huge area. Yeah. So that's what you have. You're like Las Vegas, you're Ontario, because they had, I don't even know what they're called, simulator games, mm-hmm, I guess. Mm-hmm. Very similar to like if you played Jurassic Park, where you're like in the little Jeep and you're shooting down all the dinosaurs, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. like on a more larger scale. I think something comparable to that would be kind of like a VR simulator.
Yeah.
Is very comparable to that now, but you are in a pod as mm-hmm. opposed to Ariel here, who was hoisted into the air.
Yes. Hoisted right up into the air.
So did you play it ever again? Or did you want to go on it after? Did you have the opportunity to?
And no, after so that was our like last week in Guam. Okay. And I had never played that game before. I had always played is it a House of the Dead?
Mm-hmm,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
The House of the Dead. Zombies, and there was a Jurassic Park one.
Yes. That was
it. Those are just my classic games. Uh-huh. And then some sort of driving game. You know, you're always doing a racing game.
Yeah.
But like I wanted to do this. Yep. I wanted to do that because we were leaving and I didn't think there was a GameWorks in Korea. Little did I know I would still be playing video games in other ways.
Or that Korea probably had something that was just not called GameWorks. It was something way more.
Yes. And I think when it comes to video games and gaming, like, it is very much part of my family culture mm-hmm. because my grandma used to play solitaire on her computer and she knew the code to like cheat. Favorite thing was it would shoot out three cards, but if she didn't want those three, she'd push this button and it would start shooting one card. And she was like, I always win a solitaire because I cheat. And then my dad, he played Hearts and he learned how to play Spades. And so those were the games that he would play online. Mm-hmm. And he had his online community, had like regular usernames he remembered, and they would log in and they would know like, oh, because I guess the Hearts is a game that you like have a buddy with. Or like your partners.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't know. I never played Hearts. I think now that we're kind of tying it to older generations and how they game, I mean, I know my mom used to play solitaire just with cards. Now she plays it on her phone. She doesn't bring the cards out anymore. She just plays it on her phone. And ironically enough, when we all went to Disney World a couple years ago, they didn't want to walk around no more. So all they did was just play on their phones. Which, you know, and that's another layer of gaming too. When we're talking about Disney and gaming, we play games while we're in line.
Oh my gosh, yes. So how many times have we played like
heads up? That's like a classic TikTok now, mm-hmm. where you're making fun of people who are like Disney adults playing heads up. And you know, you can even play with like people who are on the other side of the line and just get off of their game and not even play it yourself, because you are waiting in very long queues, especially mm-hmm. at different Disneys around the world. Mm-hmm. So you could, maybe that's what the thinking was in this investment. While they're waiting in line at Disney, why not play a Disney game?
And I will say that Disney has a game in the park that you can sort of do. And
Disney Play. Mm-hmm. Remember when Galaxy's Edge opened and we were like obsessed with all those little mini games in there?
So my partner and I ran around scanning all these QR codes to like flip a color for like a team. It killed our batteries so much.
I remember you guys both ran out of batteries.
And I have no idea why. I still don't understand what the goal of the game was. Yep. Yeah, it was just a novelty. That was really it.
It's funny because I went to that same, you know, where they have the bathrooms there. And there's like a QR code there. And I remember we were there because you were trying to like get up on some satellite or whatever, like try to change the color. And here I was using the restroom and going to change a diaper. And I'm like, looked over and just the nostalgia of like, why did I do that?
Why?
Why was what I was so the obsessed
point?
With that?
There was no point.
I mean, that's the Disneyland app trying to be relevant, aside from being, you know, an informational tool.
And a battery killer.
And I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier, where it's like, I get it, Disney, you're trying to get into everything, but it might be a hit or a miss. Mm-hmm. We don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. I really hope it's a hit, especially because I invested a lot of money. And given that right now I've had a lot of clients in the tech industry who have been let go, mm-hmm. Lots of companies are just letting hordes of people go. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this will open up some avenue for work, because they don't have a large, right now that I'm aware of, gaming department and gaming animators. Maybe that the individuals from some companies have been let go can be jumping on these projects.
Yeah.
You know, we're highlighting there's opportunity. We're highlighting that gaming allows you to feel community and comfort. We're highlighting the ways that you can engage in gaming. Mm-hmm. Like, even it doesn't even have to be a Disney game, but the place that I love to play Pokemon Go the most mm-hmm. is Disneyland, because mm-hmm. there's always enough people to like take down mm-hmm. like a 5-star raid.
Yeah. And you build community. Now you can actually add people who you've done raids with. Sometimes I've done raids and I'm like, who is this person adding me? And I'm like, oh, I think we did a raid together. So it's not so scary anymore. But yeah, I remember, I mean, we played Pokemon Go so much in the parks mm-hmm. Just because it's easier than playing around our houses where there's not too many people, or you have to like make the effort to go. You could just kind of hit, you know, two birds with one stone, essentially.
When we have to wait in line because we don't have those the Genie Plus, mm-hmm. it's worth it. Worth it because we definitely aren't bored, and we are doing something together. I think individuals who don't game often, they don't understand that we are interacting with each other, mm-hmm. even if we're not talking.
Yeah, it's definitely just breaking down those barriers and that stigma of what traditional gamers look like, you know, are like, how they act, how they interact with each other. You know, Disney in itself has such a wide range of reach mm-hmm. that they can go ahead and, you know, essentially diminish those barriers. I definitely hope that they listen to what people want more than what makes the most profit. Mm-hmm. It will start hopefully at the youngest level as much as possible, just because, you know, kids are just being introduced to screen time earlier and earlier mm-hmm. and it's just going to be part of their lives.
Yeah. I think there's a level of acceptance that needs to be made that mm-hmm. this is now part of mm-hmm. our current generation and future generations culture. It like, rarely do we think of walking in a room and not seeing a TV now. Mm-hmm. It's just part of our culture. I don't know any hotel that doesn't have one.
Right. Yeah.
So I think the same thing that comes with gamings, mm-hmm. with iPad games, mm-hmm. with mobile devices, not just consoles.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Disney is more aware of their audience, mm-hmm. At least the demographic. So I'd be interested to see the safety measures that they put into place.
Yeah.
And how they're going to create levels of safety. The conversations that I often have with my clients' parents are like their fears around, you know, video game safety.
Yeah.
And I certainly know that I've stopped using my mic. I have for a long time. Mm-hmm. I still haven't felt comfortable turning it on because now I know you can do like voice modulators, mm-hmm. and like they change your voice and things like that. But still, I've never felt comfortable after like the harassment I used to receive. Mm-hmm. So I understand the importance of creating some safety nets. And I'd be interested to see how Disney does that for Fortnite.
Yeah.
Or their Fortnite.
Or their Fortnite. If or ish.
Ish. I don't. Yeah.
Whatever they're planning.
I'm a little confused as to whether it is in Fortnite or it is a separate game like Fortnite.
Knowing them, it's probably going to be a separate Fortnite-like game.
Game, okay.
They would never. I mean, it says Disney x Epic Games, which is like a collaborator.
Yeah.
But not Disney x Fortnite.
Yeah, okay.
Even though you can, I think, make skins or get skins that are like Disney.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, even for like older male gamers such as my husband, he still gets just nonsense mm-hmm. on his headset. And he's just like, I'm on your team, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, oh, just kidding, bro. And he's just like, there was literally no reason for that. So mm-hmm. I definitely think that, you know, I hope, like you, that they put some safety measures because the virtual world could be very, very scary. And, you know, it will not be welcoming if, you know, those things aren't put in place. Thinking of the youngest audience, I feel like now that we have the opportunities to say, here are the things that did work and that didn't work, we want to try and introduce these things as safely as possible for them so that they have the confidence and ability to want to explore these worlds. We don't want to burn them out the minute that they get there. I mean, who would want to keep going in a world where they just feel hate and negativity? I don't think that there's room for that. There's already so much of it going around in real life that they shouldn't be experience that in a contained world.
Yeah. And
So.
I think that's one of the reasons why we try to gravitate towards Disney is that escapism is the
And it's safe.
and the layers of safety because it's meant to be family friendly, it's meant to be lighthearted.
So I really wonder how they're gonna strike that balance, because you gotta satisfy the Disney adults, but also know that the little ones are watching too. So, you know, there's so much more to be said about video games and its evolution. Again, we are not video game experts, but we are just lovers of the video games that we have been exposed to. So, if you guys have any other suggestions of video games that you guys loved either before or now, let us know in our Instagram and our Twitter X. I don't know what we want to call it anymore.
The Twitter.
The Twitter. The Twitter X. Whatever. But yeah, I think the future is gonna be interesting.
Yep, go ahead and DM us at happiestpodgt.
Try out a new game. Tell us
Yeah.
how you like it. All
Yeah.
right, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.